Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a weekly podcast to keep you up to date on what's new on our cloud platform, Microsoft Azure. Your hosts, Cynthia Crane, Evan Basilik, Suji DeMello, Kendall Roden, Kel Teeter, and Russell Young, discuss a different service or solution on each show, with subject matter experts to explain how to get started, how different services work, and how to make decisions in tricky scenarios. You can find out more about our podcast at azpodcast.com or follow us on Twitter at Azure Podcast.
Okay, sounds like I'm doing the intro. Hey, everyone. Hope all is well. Sorry I had spotty audio joining the call, but happy to be here today. We have the Azure Podcast on Azure Container Apps. Super excited about this topic. We have a full house today. We have Evan, Sajit, Russell, Cynthia, and then myself, and also Daria, who's joining us from the team. And we've had her on the show before for Azure Static Web Apps, so super happy to have her back here again today to talk about this exciting new offering. Why don't we just kick it off? Are there any updates we want to cover, or do we just want to dive right into the topic today?
It's the holidays. It was the holidays. Let's just dive in. I don't know. I think everybody was off enjoying some time off.
Yeah, everybody had at least a couple of days off where they were able to enjoy a little break from the world of cloud. So we're back, ready for 2022.
Fingers crossed.
And one of the things I had posted on our Twitter feed was that, we did like 47 episodes in 2021. So great job to the team here for putting together all those episodes. And I had listed some of the themes that we had covered in 2021. So hoping to continue along that path in 2022. And this is the first of it, or second of it, I guess you'd say, of that range. So Kendall, I want to start with you, if you don't mind. Like, tell us how your journey into this new service. I know you have some background on it, and maybe just start with that, and then we can delve into further questions.
Yeah, sounds good. So all of you that have listened to the show for a while know that I've been a big fan of containers and Kubernetes for a while now. And for the past 2 years, I've been on the Cloud Native Global Black Belt team at Microsoft. So doing a lot of AKS implementations and helping customers with their containerization journeys. And so through that process of being, I've almost been at Microsoft, I think over 5.5 years, which is crazy. And so I was just kind of thinking about what I saw doing, next in my career. And if y'all remember, we did a show on some cloud native technologies like Dapper. And I think we may have done an episode on Kata, the Kubernetes event-driven autoscaler. And so we've done all these great episodes. And I saw, an opportunity to work in this space. And so I recently have started the role of PM on the Container Apps team, which is super exciting because it kind of marries all the things that I was already doing with these open source technologies that I'm super passionate about. So I think this is going to be a great opportunity for myself from a career perspective, but also just think there's a lot of potential in where this can go and how it can help our customers. So now Daria has to deal with me. I don't know if we want to give her our condolences ahead of time or what.
Maybe congratulations, because this is an amazing opportunity for the team to benefit from Kendall's experience and from all the customer insight that she brings.
As her fellow host, we will expect even more insight into this rapidly growing, part of the business.
Yeah, congrats, Kendall. Good move.
Oh, thank you. Appreciate it. And I know Cynthia's involved too. She's been doing a lot. I feel like that's, related to this.
So InsightScoop, that I work on our worldwide customer success unit. And we're working very closely with engineering, as well as a lot of our field-facing technical experts that are our cloud solution architects, as well as our customer engineers, ensuring that they have all the information that they need when they're talking to our customers about container apps, and just really excited for this partnership as well. Starting with the first question, I don't know if Daria or Kendall are going to take it, but what is container apps and why should we care about it?
So I want Daria to take it. I think that she should take this one. I think she knows the service super well. So I'll let her kick it off, and then I'll chime in.
I'll share a little bit of our vision, and I'll let Kendall chime in as well. Our vision for Container Apps is to build serverless containers for microservices. What we see in the market is that we have a lot of customers who are super happy and productive in the PaaS space, and we have these amazing PaaS offers that are great, especially when we deal with a single application. But now when we are moving towards a lot of microservices patterns, we see that customers sometimes have to choose between staying in a productive PaaS space and enabling true microservices architectures. And a lot of times they have to move all the way to Kubernetes, which brings some additional orchestration investment and takes some of the focus away from their business logic. So Azure Container Apps now enables them to stay in that PaaS productive space and focus on their business logic, work with serverless containers, but still be able to deliver microservices patterns that are really natively built in the platform because we encapsulate the best practices for microservices.
See, now you know why I wanted her to answer it, because she did such an amazing job. And I think she really did. And from my perspective, too, I think after working with so many customers on moving to Kubernetes, a lot of them need things like the scalability. They need a lot of the flexibility that Kubernetes can provide. But with that comes a lot of those operational complexities that not every team, especially based on size or the type of application workload, is ready to tackle. So
let me make sure. So this is, if I sort of break down what y'all are describing from a surface, this sounds like PaaSifying, if that's the right word, but PaaSifying microservices, is that the right way to think about this?
So I would say it's more handling some of the operational overhead of an orchestration platform so that you can run your microservices more streamlined, right? Because we're not necessarily PaaSifying the microservices themselves, because microservices is just a one way build your application out. So I think there are multiple services on Azure where you could take, containers or microservices and run them. But I think we're trying to abstract some of the complexity of managing those platforms while still providing the some of the benefits that you might get if you were to move to a large scale orchestrator like Kubernetes. It helps at all. Like, we are abstracting on top of, Kubernetes paradigms. So we're managing a lot of those aspects for you.
Yeah, I have had a related comment, and I feel like we missed an opportunity for calling this something like microservices as a service, because that's really what it feels to be, right? It's microservices as a service. Is that not the right? I mean, I guess what Kendall just said is that's not the correct way to think about it. It's not just limited to microservices. What other use cases do you foresee on something like this?
Go ahead, Daria. Got it.
So when we think about how customers build applications, a lot of times they may not start directly with the full-blown microservice. They may port over what they already have, and that is potentially an individual app. Or they may choose to bring different components of a solution and represent them as individual services. So we definitely see additional scenarios like event-driven processing, like HTTP APIs, like long-running background jobs, which is something that traditionally we haven't supported on our other serverless platforms like Azure Functions. But we are designing with that in mind here, and we are inviting customers to bring these scenarios as well. And they have an opportunity to grow that solution and build microservices around it if they so choose, or they have an opportunity to port and grow from there. And something that Kendall mentioned as well is kind of abstracting that orchestration on top of Kubernetes. And it is worth mentioning that Azure Container Apps is running on the Azure Kubernetes Service. So this is something that enables us to build on the open source ecosystem around Kubernetes. And it's very important for how we think about that application portability across that stack and in that space.
And I'm curious, when you mentioned that it does take a lot of the operational responsibilities off from the customer, is container apps envisioned to coexist with other Kubernetes or is it more of a journey that they would go through container apps first, learn how to manage Kubernetes cluster, and then go into AKS?
So I can speak to this a little bit just from my experience. So I don't think the overall objective is for it to just be a stepping stone to Kubernetes. Now that can be a path for a customer if that path makes sense for them. So like, I think if anything, it's what are you trying to accomplish, right? Like, I think you always go back to the basics, which sounds very consulting, but I really do think it's what are you trying to accomplish? How large is the workload? What skill set does the team have? Like, I think a lot of that comes into play. And I think when you do that, Azure Container Apps might be a better fit for some customers than a full-blown, you know, AKS cluster or, managing Kubernetes themselves. Now, that being said, there might be things that Azure Container Apps is not a great fit for that you would want to go toward a platform where you have more granular control, right? So there are going to be certain things that Azure Container Apps doesn't allow you to modify or, doesn't expose to you because it is more of a PaaS platform. So if you need some of that more granular, fine-grained control, then maybe there would be some kind of evolution where, hey, we've been running in Azure Container Apps. There's a limitation here that most likely this platform will, allow us to meet. And, right, that would also be a consideration for the product group, right? Is this something that we need to bring into the offering, or is this something that's outside of the bounds of what would make, customers more productive? Then maybe they could evolve into AKS or another Kubernetes provider. So I think the biggest thing is making that option available to customers so they don't feel if the platform was ever to not meet their needs that they couldn't get that same sort of portability that Kubernetes offers them. That's my take. I don't know if Daria, you want to add anything to that.
That makes sense.
So this is all great because I think I represent a large portion of people out there that are kind of container skeptics. Because the workloads and stuff that I've been able to do in the past, I've always been able to do with other services, right? So I consume app services, functions, logic apps and stuff like that. And this sounds to me like I can possibly get into this without having to know too much about Kubernetes. Is that the case? Do I need, because straight away at the beginning, you mentioned, I think it was Dapper and CADA. And that's the reason I think I got put off with containers and experimented with them in the first place. How quickly can I get up and running with this? So take a .NET Core application that I've got, how quickly can I deploy it?
So I would say really quickly, like this, and I would say this is a positive experience we've seen from a lot of customers, that if you have a container image that you want to run, it's very, very easy to get that deployed to Azure Container Apps. And whether or not you want to use Dapper or CADA is totally up to you, right? These are optional services that you can make use of or that you cannot make use of, right? And so I would say the getting started path is A, something we're really invested in, but B, something that we've seen to be very successful for customers who want to take an application and get it up and running very quickly. I was going to say too, from a don't have to know much about Kubernetes perspective, I think if anything, as someone who's worked in this space for a really long time, we have customers who are very advanced on things like Azure Kubernetes Service, and they are making use of every open source project. They want a service mesh. They want all of these, additional bells and whistles. And so when you come from that mindset and go to Azure Container Apps, there's probably some things that you're going to ask about that are beyond the scope of maybe what a PaaS offering would provide to you, right? Or that aren't going to be kind of that number one priority for us. So I actually think it makes a lot of sense for people who don't have any Kubernetes experience to be able to come in and get started because they don't necessarily have all of the, I would say, like, reverse engineering to do to try to understand, okay, if I could do this in Kubernetes, like how does that translate backward? Whereas some people are just going to be thinking, oh, wow, I want to run containers. I don't have to worry about Kubernetes. I can get up and running really quickly. Does that make sense? So I think yeah. There's a lot of education and documentation to be done to help both sides of the customer spectrum.
I think you sold it to me. I'll give it a go.
I do love the word container skeptic though, Russell, because I think in some ways I'm sort of the same way. Like I hear it, but I just don't have enough experience to really grasp when I should be using that versus some of the older constructs. Relative to sort of this progression, if you think back in time a little bit, we had ACS, Azure Container Service, originally. That's been most, I'm not even 100% sure if that's still around as a service customers can onboard to, but functionally that's, migrated and evolved into AKS, right? Azure Kubernetes Service. But the original vision of some of that was you could just run these containers without having to worry about the Kubernetes cluster. when I think about Azure Container Apps in that framework, it sounds like, if I understand it right, you know, ACS to AKS was about sort of adopting Kubernetes and sort of using the industry standard of Kubernetes. This is now saying, hey, we're still using Kubernetes under the cover, so you're completely portable if you're living in a Kubernetes world, which, you know, most container-based workloads are doing these days. Then now you can just think about your container and not really worry about any of the infrastructure around beyond just your container. Is that the way to think about this progression? And that's where I should start, you know. So I think where I'm going is, should I start? Hey, I have an app. I'm Russell, right? Or I'm a container skeptic. I have a .NET Core app, and I want to run it. I should start with, hey, can I run this in container apps, Azure Container Apps? I can't for some reason. Then I go to AKS, but ideally, in most cases, I'll just be able to run it in container apps. Like, is that how, as somebody who wants to deploy an app today and I don't really care where I am, I just want it to be in a container so I'm portable, is that the way I should approach this?
So I have some opinions about, like, the whole evolution of all of this. So, okay. Like, I would agree, like, us going from ACS to AKS, I think, was Kubernetes is the de facto mm-hmm. standard orchestration platform. It kind of won the orchestration battle. Therefore, we decided that we were going to streamline our efforts and, you know, provide a really comprehensive Kubernetes platform. I think if I had a .NET Core application, just like a, you know, singular application, it might be mm-hmm. a good fit for app service, right? So like, A, do I want to containerize? If the answer is yes, for whatever those reasons are, right? That am I going to containerize? Yeah. Why am I containerizing story? Then if I came to Azure or another cloud provider or whatever, and I'm like, okay, where do I want to run this? Well, if I'm, you know, Kindle and I have a really basic .NET Core application, if I run this on AKS, I have to provision my cluster, I have to basically set up some kind of ingress. I have to create all of my deployment objects within Kubernetes. I have to think about how I'm going to do security access, like all of those things, right? So to me, that would be, you know, overwhelming if I didn't have a lot of Kubernetes experience to go do that, because a lot of it's around the operationalization. Like, you can get up and run on an AKS cluster really quickly, but if you want to take that to production, all of the other aspects that come into play, I think, is where customers sometimes falter. And a lot of customers...
node upgrades, all that kind of stuff, yeah.
Yeah, I think, like, if I want to get up and running quickly, I think there's a lot of platforms. If I want to get to production quickly without having to manage things like updates, upgrades, like all those kind of things, then I might gravitate toward an Azure Container Apps. And then if for whatever reason that feature set didn't serve me, then maybe I have to consider some of the other additional operational bits I'd have to pick up in exchange for the granularity of control of
and that's exactly sort of what I was asking Kendall. So, you know, which is, I should really, if I have a containerized app, you know, so I went from .NET Core and I know I want to containerize it, start with the simplest world for myself, which would be container apps. And then if for some reason that doesn't meet my business or technical needs, then I start saying, okay, do I go to AKS? Do I go to app services? Do I go to other places I can run containers? But start with the easiest, right? Start with something where I can just hand it a container and I think you guys mentioned it is AKS under the covers, but at some level, I don't care. I'm just running a container and it runs the way that I expect it to run. Okay, great. No, thank you.
You know, I kind of have a question related to both what Russell and Evan were talking about, which is, you know, Russell was saying you have an app, right? And you wanted to put it into this new service. You still have to containerize it, right? And I don't want to minimize the effort and the amount of operational overhead involved with managing containers, right? It is there, you know, getting the right image, making sure it's secure, patching it. You have to patch the image yourself. So those things that customers have to do. So that just to be aware, like, you know, someone like Russell, who is a container skeptic, would have to overcome those hurdles before getting into this new service. So that's, am I clear that it's the container that has to be provided to this service, right? It's not an app per se.
Yeah.
I think the way to think about it is that the primary asset that you would provide is the container, but we do expect customers to have two different paths to start. We expect most customers to start with containers, but we also expect some customers to start with code. And this is where deployment pipelines can bridge that gap. So for example, we look at GitHub Actions as an opportunity for customers to start with their code and abstract some of the container aspect of this.
Yeah, I will say, but alongside that, right, like the expectation is there's going to be a Docker file. There's going to be like, you're still going to have to go through the process of understanding how to get your container running. Like we can do GitHub Action integration to make that revision process more streamlined, but you couldn't just, we don't auto-generate the Docker artifacts in order to get your code running in Azure Container Apps. So luckily we have great tooling that's integrated through Visual Studio and Visual Studio Code. And I think Daria would echo that we're going to be doing a lot of investments in the developer experience and how the whole end-to-end microservices development process flows. But unfortunately, you couldn't just go from code to container apps without that pipeline at least building that Docker file or that image at some point.
Yeah, and the reason I brought that up is because this is not the first service that has tried to encapsulate AKS, right? The Azure Spring Cloud already does that today, right? It basically encapsulates its users to AKS clusters for each Spring Cloud instance under the covers, and that allows you to just bring an app, right? So it doesn't require you to know anything about containers. It takes the app, it containerizes it automatically for you, and then deploys that container within AKS. Now, of course, just to be sure, that's an opinionated service because you have to use Spring Cloud or .NET Steel Toe. Those are the only two frameworks it supports. You can't use like Golang or something else, for example. So it's limited in that way. But I just wanted, that's why I brought up that whole thing. I think this is, you know, we found a lot of customers, you know, just don't want to get in. Managing containers is difficult, right? Keeping it secure. How many times, you know, I mean, I think Kendall knows with working some of our customers in the past, you know, they stress over how to keep those images secure, right? How to get the correct baseline image that has passed all the security CIS standards and whatnot. It's not a trivial task. That's the only reason I brought it up. But I appreciate the response, and we can hand it off to Cynthia.
Kind of following up what Evan was talking about earlier, that app service is an option as well for deploying containers. And it is one of the services that I believe a lot of our listeners are very familiar and comfortable with. What are kind of some decision points where you go across like all the different services that Azure currently is available for deploying containers?
I think a big differentiator, at least from my perspective, and I'll let Daria share hers, is the scalability aspect. So with Azure Container Apps, you can scale to zero, which is like a huge benefit. So you can actually have your containers running and then scale down to zero through the use of Kata. So that's something that you could accomplish on AKS or Kubernetes, but you'd have to manage the Kata aspect yourself. Now, to be fair, AKS has a Kata extension now that they're sort of like integrating into the platform. But in general, I think that's a big differentiator for something like an app service, is that you can scale those, you know, those pods or those containers down to zero. And then I think another one is obviously you can scale based on, you know, these event-driven processy type of events, right? Like if I have messages in a queue and I want to scale my containers out based on that, I can do that with Azure Container Apps, which is not necessarily something you get, is the granularity of scale from something like an app service. And so I think those are definitely considerations. And like we said, I think like some of the networking aspects of being able to expose multiple containers and have them all communicate with one another. I think you know, the microservices architecture running inside of container apps provides you that. And we also have Dapper integrated in, right? Unlike app service, right, you can actually run that sidecar model and have Dapper offload some of the responsibility of your application in terms of like PubSub and secrets management and things of that nature. So I don't know if Daria has any other thoughts on kind of the spectrum there, but those are some things I think differentiate it as a platform.
I think if we were to kind of generalize a bit from there, in terms of some of the major differentiators, both within the spectrum of offers at Microsoft and within the industry as a whole, one of the biggest differentiators is really the aspect of being able to do this serverless event processing, because we do see container platforms that exist in the broader industry context that are very focused on web and HTTP-based type of scenarios. Whereas what we see with our customers is that they definitely show demand for event-driven type of workloads, and those event-driven type of workloads at production grade need to be able to scale, like Kendall mentioned. And so one of the big differentiators relative to some of the container platforms in the industry would be this event-driven serverless aspect. And that is also one of the points that Kendall mentioned within the app service space, where app service is a wonderful primitive to work with. It was designed primarily for web, and so it excels at web scenarios, but it's a little bit difficult to go from there and start to handle event-driven and microservices type of scenarios. And then another aspect that is a key differentiator both within our existing portfolio and industry-wide is the microservices aspect. Because microservices at the end of the day is something that we could potentially summarize as a design pattern. And when we talk about design patterns, we have to think about how we encapsulate them. And so we already have a product in the Kubernetes ecosystem, which is Dapper, that encapsulates the best practices for microservices design patterns. And instead of inventing our own, we brought in Dapper. And as I mentioned earlier, that is a decision that we make for app portability. We want to give customers that flexibility, that portability, and knowing that they're using state-of-the-art products in the broader ecosystem that are open source, that they can themselves contribute to and influence the product. And I think when we look at our existing portfolio, that's not something that is directly available.
So I think one thing you just reminded me of, Kendall, a little bit earlier when you were talking about scale to zero, this was one of the other things that put me off containers earlier on, was cost as well. So are we talking about scale to zero, meaning that there's no cost, but things are still running, things are still listening? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, well, so there's scale to zero, but with scale to zero, obviously on, like, if you think Azure Functions, there's going to be the implication of like startup, like a startup time, right? That like cold start that happens if you scale down to zero. So like that's kind of the trade-off, right? Is if you scale down to zero, you're gonna have to eat the burden of having some kind of cold start whenever you initially scale that back up from zero to one. So we do also have the concept of like an idle container, which is basically a container that's not scaled fully down to zero, but isn't taking any traffic. But it's kind of like a warm instance, and there will be a minimal cost in order to run some of those idle instances so that you don't have to have the cold start. So there's kind of two options there. Either like I'm paying, you know, nothing for the container because it's scaled to zero, or I have an idle fee if I want to run it as an idle container.
And on top of that, is it just cost per compute as you'd normally expect? Or is there something specific for Azure container apps?
I think Daria is more knowledgeable about where we are on the cost model, but it may not be. I don't know. I'll let her speak to that.
So for the pricing model, the primary default model is the serverless scale down to zero, and we essentially have a consumption-based model. And then there is an opt-in model for the idle charges, which are for super sensitive workloads. You can choose a certain number of instances that you might want to keep, even if they're idle, and we will differentiate if we're executing or not executing, and apply idle charges instead of active charges.
Yeah, thanks for asking that, Russell, because I was actually going to ask that earlier, because the scale thing, when we were talking about scale. The other element to this that I don't think we've talked about is integration with other, I'll call it private services, right? When you think about, there's sort of two models. There's the in VNet and out of VNet, or I'm sorry, there's the, I'm deploying a PaaS service, you know, app services, whatever, and it's sort of in the public multi-tenant world, and then I have my stuff deployed to, you know, within my VNet so that it's only accessible by my internal resources, I use private link, all that kind of stuff. Is container apps already in that world where I have that choice, or is that a future state to be able to do it in my VNet?
So I can talk to this. So I can talk to at least the first aspect. So by the time this episode comes out, there should be at least outbound VNet connectivity. So we're working on the VNet integration. So you'll be able to connect outbound using like private endpoint to a storage account or something else within your VNet. And then the inbound feature is something that we're still working on. VNet connectivity.
So outbound would be, I'm going from container apps in a VNet to some public service through private link and whatnot. Inbound would be some public request to my VNet.
Yeah, so I know outbound, at least when I speak to that, it's going to be, hey, I can do, you know, a private endpoint integration with another Azure service. And then inbound, I believe, is the call coming into the VNet to your service.
Gotcha.
And that's what we're working on. And then, so that's something we're actively going to be investing in, though. Like, the goal is to have, you know, end-to-end VNet integration. Right. And then from a,
Go ahead, Ken.
Things like, when you think about AKS, how you can do kind of like the private cluster concept with like private link, that's something that we think through a variety of other components, like won't necessarily be as applicable to this service. So I don't really have a lot of detail beyond that. I know we've had discussions around it, but Daria, I don't know if you want to share anything from that perspective, like on roadmap, or if that's just something we'll have to table for now.
I think you've already shared, right? We actually have a public repo. And we are triaging through a lot of these requests, and you can see that in terms of VNet functionality, for example, we've already committed to that as delivering for our roadmap. So customers can go to our repo and have that very transparent view of areas where we're actively investing, just based on their feedback and the commitments that we're making for the product.
Okay. No, that's great, because I mean, I think that the VNet integration scenario is the one that we see super common. That's one that people get sort of the most concerned about from a security perspective. How can I make sure that's happening? The public, I think, to the point we talked about, there's a number of different services that handle public inbound traffic really, really well. And so you have other options out there. So, okay, great.
If I may squeeze in one last question, I know we're almost out of time here. What is the scope of a container wrap? Is a single container mapped to a single container wrap, or is a container wrap made up of a group of containers? How should one think about that?
So you can think of a container app as like if I'm running a single application instance, so very similar to kind of like what you would think of, oh, I'm gonna run a single container in a pod in Kubernetes. You can think about it very similarly. So if you have a single application instance, you're not really running multiple microservices in a single pod, right? So it's one container, like I would say one application per container app, but that container app is gonna be backed by like the pod concept. So you can have multiple replicas, and then you can obviously have sidecar containers that are running alongside that. And we have really good architectural diagrams that go through this as well. And one thing we didn't call out is the concept of revisions. So we've actually built in support for like an ingress for you. And so because we bring Envoy like to do some of that ingress, you can also do traffic splitting across revisions. So for example, if I like trigger a change to my application code, I can build a new image and I can actually push that via GitHub Actions and trigger a new revision of my container app. And then I can do traffic splitting. So I can say I want multiple instances or multiple revisions, excuse me, of my application to run. So you could get like a really cool blue-green experience without having to go set up your own like ingress or do your own traffic splitting. So that's another cool feature that we didn't really get a chance to touch much on, but is definitely something that I think customers will find compelling.
And if I do have an application that is made up of, let's say, five containers because they're microservices based and they're all talking to each other, so is that five Azure container apps that I'm deploying and they all could go wind up in the same VNet to talk to each other? How does that work?
Yeah, so they're all within a single container apps environment. So you create your Azure container apps environment, prerequisites being like a log analytics workspace. You have to have a resource group, obviously. But yeah, you create your environment with your log analytics workspace, and then you deploy multiple container apps into a single container apps environment. And then you can specify ingress parameters, you know, depending on if the app is going to be internally accessible or needs a public endpoint. And we do that FQDN creation basically for you. So you don't have to worry about doing the exposure from an ingress perspective.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I think this has been great. Any more questions for Kendall and Daria?
No, this really helps. I've said this before. At some point, I'm going to push myself into it, but I need to go do this because it feels like it's getting easier and easier to deploy an app in this kind of a configuration.
It's a New Year's resolution for us both, and containers.
Yeah.
The big question is, Russell, what's your container hesitancy now?
this has been a roller coaster. This change. I'm definitely going to give it a go. And if it takes me more than half a day to get something up and running, then I'll be back in touch complaining.
You know who to go to now, Russell, right?
Yeah, I would also say, but this like brings up a really good point. This is, you know, a newly preview, you know, service, and there's a lot of potential, and we really want to understand what customers want and need from the service. And so we encourage everyone to share that feedback and file issues on the GitHub repo. We're actively going through that on our calls. And so we want to make sure that we're very responsive to what people need and how this can serve them best. So please feel free to share your feedback with us, good and constructive. I'll say constructive. And we'll do whatever we can to make sure that you get a better experience or the best experience moving forward is our goal.
That's Kendall's consulting background kicking in.
I'm super excited, right? Like, I think I'm planned because I didn't think I'd have the opportunity to join this team. So I'm super passionate about it. And so I certainly know what it looks like to go through that process as a developer and as an architect. So being able to translate that into making this a good experience is something that we, that's our, I think, overall objective on the team. So.
And Kendall can't stop smiling. It's funny watching her. For those of you who aren't watching the video, as we're talking through this, every time she talks about joining the team, she likes her smile just gets bigger and bigger as we go. Okay, right. Awesome. Great. Thanks, folks.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any thoughts, questions, or just want to connect, find us on Twitter at Azure Podcast. Background music has been taken from ccmixer.org under the Creative Commons license. We hope you'll tune in again soon to keep learning with us.